I will say this, it is worse in some areas than it was. I was lucky, I was on the west side, and it wasn't bad at all. So, I mean, it's wherever you are, and if you don't have to be out today, then don't. Just stay in. It's a good day to stay in.
And don't hurry to be on time.
Right.
Much better to get to where you're going in one piece and with your car okay,
Right.
and be a little bit later than you normally would be than to try to push it and get yourself in trouble.
Because I know as more people have gotten out, there's a few more wrecks out there, and I think that's a lot of the delays. So we will catch up with Darren and Joe here shortly. But, Steve, we are now in the first full day, I guess, of the Titans head coaching search. Something that was a surprise, not a surprise, all at the same time. You know, that's kind of how I've described it. But yesterday, John Robinson having the press conference and saying that they – are parting ways officially with Mike Mularkey, and now it's on whoever the next will be. The three names that have surfaced so far are Matt LaFleur, the LA Rams offensive coordinator, Steve Wilks, the Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator, and Mike Vrabel, the Houston Texans defensive coordinator. And what stands out to me on those three names is you have two defensive guys and one offensive guy. Now, you had to figure that somebody from the Rams offensive staff was going to get a look after the year that they've had, but it is interesting to me that there are some defensive names on that list just because John Robinson was pretty adamant that, you know, it's going to revolve around Marcus Mariota and getting this offense back on track.
I think everybody believes that, and he alluded to it yesterday. But the other thing he said, Chase, is he said you need a leader of men first and foremost. And so I think he's truly looking for a head coach, and he's not totally married to the idea that it has to be an offensive guy. He wants the best overall coach and figures that that best overall coach along with him can identify a pretty good offensive coordinator. The name there that's really intriguing to me is LaFleur.
Yeah.
Because of his background in Atlanta, where he did such a good job with Kyle Shanahan and Matt Ryan. I mean, MVP numbers last year with those two guys in charge of him. And look at what Ryan and the Falcons did this year without those two guys. It wasn't nearly as good. And then you look at what Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur were able to do in Los Angeles this year with Jared Goff. I mean, Jared Goff was a guy a year ago that didn't even look like he belonged in this league.
No.
He just looked totally overmatched by defenses and completely lost. And this year, he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league on the highest scoring offense. And those guys deserve a ton of credit. Now, the thing about LaFleur is he hasn't called the plays himself yet in either of these stops. But you do look at the numbers that he's been able to put up in those stops and the numbers when he wasn't there, and you see a stark difference. So I think it's a really bright mind there, and everybody in this league now, based off of what the Rams did this year, are looking for the next Sean McVay. What better place to find the next Sean McVay than one of Sean McVay's guys from that very Rams staff?
And I agree with that. I don't want to see, and I don't think John Robinson will, I just don't want to see them get caught up in finding the next Sean McVay, because look, it's going to be difficult to do that, to replicate what he has done this year. And also, you also have to factor in that the rest of the league might figure this system out and it might not work past this year. So I think that that's something that people need to be a little cautious about. I just want them to find the right guy that's going to not necessarily turn this team around. They made the playoffs. They won a playoff game, but is going to move forward, as they like to say, and is going to take this team to a championship contending level. And I have mixed emotions on this whole thing with Mike Mularkey. I thought that he had done enough to get another year. Clearly there was some discussions about his staff that he didn't want to make changes to. That's why he is not the head coach anymore. I think that's pretty clear. But if you're going to get rid of a guy that got you to the playoffs and won a playoff game, you're going to have to upgrade.
Well, here's what I said is, first off, I think Mike Mularkey earned the right to get into the offseason and have discussions with John Robinson and Amy Adams Strunk about what the next step is. You know,
right.
They got themselves to the playoffs. That should be commendable. And Mike Mularkey deserves a ton of credit for that. He deserved the conversation to talk about what the next step was. And by all counts, he got it. And he wasn't on the same page with them, and that's why they made a move. And I think they got to the only place they could yesterday when it was clear he wasn't on the same page with them. But moving forward, the thing that you have to be careful of as a Titans fan, and look, I just said it, they made the only move possible when it was clear that Mike Mularkey wasn't on the same page with them. But here's the issue going forward is you just got rid of a coach who won 19 games in 2 years and got you to the playoffs from where you were. And so now as you're hiring a coach, you're not replacing Ken Whisenhunt now. You're replacing a playoff coach That's a very small window to find a guy who's better. You're Georgia now. You're Georgia replacing Mark Richt, who was winning 10 games a year but couldn't win the big one, and you're trying to find the Kirby Smart who can be even better. Somehow Georgia did it. It's not an easy task, and now it falls on John Robinson. And the other big point there is ever since they were both hired, the clock was on Mike Mularkey because he was the unpopular hire there. And so every time something went wrong, people pointed to Mularkey and criticized him and said, oh, man, we need a new head coach to finally get to that next level. Well, now you're in that situation. But you know what that does? It starts the clock on John Robinson. He has essentially been able to do no wrong up until this point. Now the hire's on him. And it better be a good one. Otherwise, the criticism is going to start to go his way.
Yeah, because, look, as a GM of a team, I mean, you probably only get one. And if you miss on this, then you're out. We say hello to Darren McFarlane, who has made his way to the Jack Daniel's Barrel House. Hello, Darren.
Hello, gents.
Glad to see you.
Good conversation. Thank you for the morning show. As I sat poking my way downtown, it's not good. It's not good. By the way, congratulations on living downtown. On days like today, you win. Steve Lehman, winner.
I don't usually regret that decision, but on days like today, I'm very, very happy.
You should tweet out just hashtag winning. That's what you should tweet out. Because today, you're winning. I know I'm stating the obvious for a lot of folks out there, but some of you may have been cooped up for a while. I think my wife is kind of tired of being cooped up and school being out again, and so I know there's temptations to get on the roads. If you don't have to, don't.
Go sledding.
Go have fun in your neighborhood, but don't get out. It's not good. In fact, Joe Rexroad continues that he's finally getting here. He said he's been in the car. He probably enjoyed the morning show like I did as we poked our way in. It took him well over an hour, too, to get here. I agree with a lot of what you guys are talking about, and we certainly discussed it ad nauseum yesterday. And by the way, I can give you all the examples, and I used the Kirby Smart, Mark Richt example yesterday because I also said there are so many failures we could use an entire segment on. Ole Miss said David Cutcliffe wasn't good enough, and they moved on from David Cutcliffe because they felt like he had taken them as far as he could take them, and they hired Ed Orgeron. How did that work out? I mean, there are so many failures. And it's a risk, but I even had a buddy call me from another market, and the first thing he said was, what in the world are the Titans doing? They just won a playoff game. You fired your coach? What? And I get it from an outsider's perspective, certainly understand that, but here's the deal. John Robinson, it's now his show, and it's not like it wasn't his show, but I think you well stated what you said. Mike Mularkey has taken a lot of blame. Do I think he was the greatest head coach ever? No.
No.
No, I don't. But he did a lot of good in a short amount of time, and certainly he fixed the stench that Ken Whisenhunt left behind in this market, and it was a stench that he left behind in just a season and a half. He almost single-handedly destroyed this franchise. So he did a really good job of getting this thing back. But here's the deal. Now it's John Robinson's baby. This hire, there are two things that you cannot blame Mike Mularkey for anymore. Marcus Mariota moving forward, because to me, I don't know how everybody else out there feels, but I don't know one way or the other what he is. He may be a franchise quarterback. He may be elite, but right now I don't know that he is that. Do I think he's bad? Is he terrible? Is he a bust? No. I just don't know what he is. But all I know is you can't blame Exotic Smashmouth anymore. And so the next guy, whoever the next guy in, Marcus Mariota better take the next step forward, because he didn't take the next step forward this year, and that had a lot to do with Mike Mularkey losing his job. So you can't blame him anymore on that. So that's going to go on John Robinson's feet. And the next thing is everything is going to be evaluated a little bit more. This coach, by the way, he's walking into standards.
Sure.
Like you said, I heard you as I put the headset on. What standards were there when Mike Mularkey took over as the interim?
There's nothing. It was win a game.
Try to find the road. I mean, you're down in a ditch in the creek bed. Try to find the road. Here's a lamp. I mean, good luck. Good luck to you. Here's a little candle. But now the standards are they just got to the divisional round of the playoffs and they fired their coach. So right. I'm thinking you might want to win double-digit games, which probably is a little unfair in the NFL to have those type of standards.
The the thing that will ultimately happen, it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, if the new guy comes in and struggles a bit next year, I think you get a pass there in your first year. But at some point, whatever time frame you want to put on it, you're going to be expected to improve upon what this was this year. And that's ultimately winning a division title and winning more games in the playoffs, getting closer to the Super Bowl. And Mike Mularkey was two wins away from getting to the Super Bowl this year.
That's still,
you know, you can say you're still
hear,
far,
right.
far away, but that's where they were. Yeah. They were two wins away from getting to the Super Bowl. So the next guy at some point, again, it doesn't have to be next year, but at some point he's got to do better than that to justify making this move.
Yeah, but if Marcus Mariota doesn't get better, he's not going to get a pass.
No.
Because now it's like, okay, well, you blame the coach and the system for that. So what is it? So what do they have? And if Marcus Mariota doesn't take the giant step forward, because, oh, by the way, they got big decisions to make. They're going to have to pay him, if they keep him around, a ton of money, like $125 million. That's a huge decision for a business. And if he doesn't do that, what if it's a little bit better than last year? What if it's in between year one and year two? Do you know what they have in Marcus Mariota? Let's just say that's what year four is. In between year one and year two, it's okay. Patches, really good. Other games, you're wondering what that was.
I think he's a good quarterback that has the potential to be really, really, really good in this league. But here's the thing.
But that'll be 4 years in. Like at that point, at some point you have to go, okay, aren't you what you are? I mean, who really turns on the light switch in year five or six or seven?
Yeah, my big thing here is I think we saw the light switch a year ago in 2016, and he was phenomenal.
Yep.
I don't think he was ever right. We've talked about it before, the offseason injury and what that meant to his elevation as a quarterback and improvement to get to this year. And then he was hurt during the year. We never saw a guy who was right this year. But that's the big question for the next guy is, one, what does this offense look like? It won't be exotic smash mouth. But it's hard for me to imagine they're going to completely move away from the running game, because that's how the offensive line and the running backs are built. So how do you make it more creative for Mariota but keep some of those elements there? That's important. And then the other thing is, what do you do with Mariota? Everybody talks about a guy who maybe wants to see him run more or uses his skills more. Well, what is that exactly? And, oh, by the way, he ran again on Saturday night, and he strained his quad immediately.
And he gets hurt
the
again.
More you run this guy, the more you put him in harm's way. Yes. And the biggest thing you can't have is him missing games. And so what's the offense look like in terms of play calling and ingenuity? That's a big question. But how can this new coaching staff, new coach, protect Mariota in ways that even Mike Mularkey and his staff, who were charged with that, were unable to do?
Okay, put overtime down on your timesheet, because you did put in 14 minutes, almost 15 minutes overtime. I'm going to make it a half hour, Steve, because I like you.
Thank you for letting me round up.
And tweet out hashtag winning, Steve Levin.
Hashtag winning.
Because you're winning today.
And hashtag winning. Good to see you, by the way, Joe.
Hey, what's up?
Talk to you last hour. Glad to see you've made it from home into the building.
As Joe Retro.
An hour wasn't enough.
I was going to say, both of us dealt with it. Steve gets to walk home. So, like I said, hashtag
well winning. Played. That's double hashtag.
By the way, there we go. That's some clapping for Steve Lehman today.
See you guys. Be
All
good.
Right, see you. Steve Lehman, News Channel 5. Good stuff there. Joe Rexroad from the Tennessean, columnist, has made his way to the desk. You ventured out just like me and found out you don't have to be out and stay home.
No doubt, yeah. And, you know, the roads aren't terrible, but there are some bad situations out there. So
yeah, that's kind of the way I view it. I mean, not like everybody – it's not like an ice rink coming in, but there are areas – it's just not good. It's a slow go. I mean, I was one of the fast ones, and I was 35, 40 the whole, at times until it came to a screeching halt. But if you're moving, it's 35, 40.
Yeah.
And that's the ones that are really getting after it. Some are – going 15, 20.
Like there was someone going like 6 miles an hour, and I was right behind them, of course. And I was like, if you're doing this, don't leave.
Right, exactly.
Do you really have to be out here?
Yeah, I got behind that car. If you feel it's this unsafe and you're going 10 miles per hour on the interstate, you should have stayed home. Like your decision should have been, I'm not leaving home, because clearly –
because it's actually more dangerous for someone
to drive
that,
like that, yes.
Someone's going to smash into your backside.
Agree. Dick on line one. Dick, what's up?
Hey, how you doing this morning?
Good.
Hey, I covered 24 miles this morning. Got a lot of stuff done. Seemed like I was in Walmart by myself, but that was good.
Is this Doug?
No, this is Vic.
Vic. Oh, yeah. I was going to say, this is not. This is Vic. Okay, Vic, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Hey, Steve, I wanted to raise a question to Steve. Did he ever have the same question about Steve McNair when he was hurt?
Well,
and now my statement. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Well, Steve is walking home, so he's winning today. He gets to walk two blocks to his house.
Okay. My second statement about Coach Mularkey and coaches unions, because players have a union. Let me give you a scenario. Because I'm a coach and I'm part of a union, a coaches union. What would happen if no coaches, not even a high school coach, took their job, the Titans' job, all because they're going to back Mularkey up? Why don't Mularkey go back in that office and talk to John Robinson, fight for his job, say, Obisky will not leave, give me this last chance, and if it don't work, you won. I'll leave out gracefully.
Vic, unfortunately, that ship has sailed, my friend. There's none of that going to happen. Yesterday, that book has been closed.
You don't think he would go back in and fight for his job?
No.
Wow.
That's moving on from.
Oh, Mike. The Rooney Rule. Will the lady from Arizona Cardinals, will she have an opportunity to be interviewed?
I don't know. Good
Is
questions.
That a fight with her?
Good questions. Thanks for the call, Vic, as always. Okay. They're going to have to comply to the Rooney Rule. I mean, they've got a list, and that has got to be part of it. And I don't know. We don't know the complete list. Certainly names are starting to surface. I don't know if she's in the mix or not, but they are going to have to comply to rules in the NFL, which it looks like Oakland did not do a very good job of, and they may get penalized for it.
No, Oakland didn't do a good job, and you've got these situations where a team has one person picked out, and that was obviously the case with Oakland. So I've heard people say they need to change the rule over, but see the rule. Look at right now this situation. We're talking about all these candidates. Have you heard anyone mention a minority candidate among the possibilities of the Titans?
I have not.
Well, that's the problem, and see that's with the Rooney Rule.
Have you?
I have not. And that is the problem. And I've got to look more into that because that's ridiculous. There should be good candidates. And with the Rooney Rule, even if you have someone picked out, interviewing people brings people who are moving up and who deserve an opportunity to light. And maybe the next team maybe we should look at this guy. And that's why you have to comply with it, to me. And that's why if you don't comply with it and if it's all a sham, then you need to pay a hefty, hefty fine. For not complying. And so, yeah, the Titans not only have to comply, but I hope they're serious about it because it makes no sense at all that every good candidate for this job would be a white guy.
I guess Steve Wilkes, D.C. at Carolina.
Okay, that name's – okay, there
right?
you go.
There you go.
Steve Wilkes. Okay, well,
so,
there you go.
And I've seen him pretty high up on the list. I don't know much about him.
Carolina, D.C.
I mean, they're going to have to. They can't – I mean, that will have to be in play and – from what I can tell, it seems like, he'll be a serious candidate.
Well, Terrell Austin is a guy I think did a tremendous job with the Lions and what he had to work with there as defensive coordinator. There's another guy I think, a lot of teams I would think would be interested in talking to him. So, but, again, the Rooney Rule to me, it gets abused a lot. And I understand the idea of, there's one person we wanted, but – to me, the reason you do it is just for this reason, because there should be more candidates being talked about out there.
We'll take a break, come back with more. I want to get your thoughts on some things that were said yesterday at the press conference. Thought some interesting questions were thrown out there. We'll continue this discussion. We're here live at Bridgestone Arena. If you don't have to get out today, my advice, don't get out. I know a lot of you are probably going stir crazy at home and you're ready to get out. If you don't have to, don't. It's just not worth it today. Predators and Vegas Golden Knights tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have pregame for you at 6. I'm Darren McFarland, Joe Rexroad, columnist for the Tennessean, alongside. We'll be back right after this. This is what I know in the second hour, a little bit later in the second hour. UT fans, You might want to hear mine. My Tawick coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. I've certainly given you some good nuggets throughout the course of this season. I may give you a couple more here today. Darren McFarland, Joe Rexroad, columnist for the Tennessean, alongside here at Bridgestone Arena. Jack Daniels, Barrelhouse, Predators, and Vegas Golden Knights tonight. It'll be Vegas tonight, Arizona here on Thursday, and then another game on Saturday. So Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday here at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators have spent a lot of time on the road this season. So tonight, Vegas, Arizona, and Florida, and then Tampa next Tuesday. Then they will have their lone last road game of the month in New Jersey next week, and then back at home against Chicago. This is the lightest month they have on their schedule. So if you're going to be missing Philip Forsberg, this would be the month to do it. Victor Arvidsson, good news, out on the ice skating after leaving yesterday's practice, not putting any pressure or weight on one leg, but he is out there skating with his team here this morning. Seeing reports on Twitter, folks in Clarksville got rulers in the ground, 7 inches of snow in Clarksville.
Wow.
How about that?
Oh, man. That is
7 inches, you know, in this area is about as, you know, that's about like a foot, really, when you think about it, right? It has the impact of getting about 12 to 14 inches.
It's like 3 feet.
You basically
where I'm
double
from.
It. Yeah. Right? Yeah. In the south.
Yeah. I will say I was surprised when I walked outside today on the other side of Nashville how much is on the ground. Because I went to bed and it
nothing.
Was nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, actually, even at like 3 in the morning, I woke up, looked outside, nothing. And well, it came fast. So the kids celebrated wildly last night as the announcement came.
And
no school.
The announcements came fast and furious.
Might be another one today.
Wouldn't be surprised. So what did you take from yesterday's press conference by John Robinson, which we carried live?
Yeah, I think I wrote this, but, you know, John Robinson is, yeah, I mean, he's a no-nonsense guy, but he's kind of, you know, he's got that dry sense of humor and kind of affable, you know. Usually he was pretty intense yesterday, and he didn't say a lot about exactly what happened here, but, you know, you could easily take some things. First of all, he did confirm that the press conference Mularkey had Sunday was part of his demise, which is interesting. But, I mean, there were a lot of people outraged immediately when he said, Mariota's developing fine.
That was
Terry Trubisky, good job. Everything's going well. You know, status quo moving forward. I mean, obviously, a lot of fans certainly didn't want to see that, and a lot of fans wanted Mularkey gone, so they got their wish. But I think one thing he repeated a few times yesterday was, you know, maximizing the abilities. And so this does come down to, you know, I actually went on with Braden and Steve earlier today, and the question was, so how talented is this roster? You know, John Robinson said a couple times, this is a talented roster. Some people think, hey, Peter King, what do you have, fifth or whatever, fourth, fifth in the league? You know, I don't buy that. But there's the thought that there's a lot more talent here than the results are reflecting. And so now you bring it. We'll see. I mean, to me, next year, if a coach comes in and improves on this, that's a tremendous achievement, especially because the schedule is going to be a lot more difficult. But I personally think that this is about what happened, about a fringe playoff talented roster. It's much better. John Robinson has improved it a lot, obviously, in just two years. But I don't think it's a Super Bowl roster that got run into the ground this year.
There was a considerable gap between them and the Patriots. It played out that way on Saturday night. You could tell there was – and I realize the Patriots do that. I'm not going to use – I don't want to use too many Patriots examples because they are the standard in the league. They make a lot of teams look silly. But you could tell as that game played out, there was a pretty sizable gap between New England and Tennessee, talent-wise.
But maybe it was a talent.
It could be schemes. Because really, when you think about it, New England didn't do anything. I mean, Tom Brady was basically just dinking and dunking. Yep. He was just dumping it off. I mean, it's not like he was lighting up the Titans. I mean, he would – which, by the way, I think the Titans need to adapt that more. I think they need to do a lot more of that for whatever reason. I've been here since day one, since they've been in Nashville, and – even in their successful years, even when they were really good, they've really never utilized their running backs. I mean, they've never used them out of the backfield at all. They've never really – I mean, they've had a couple guys here and there, but overall, like that New England does that, you know, 17 years they've been doing that with Tom Brady. They have a stable of running backs. One, it may be a LeGarrette Blount type or a Corey Dillon type, and then you've got your Kevin Faulks or your Lewis's or your Whites. Or, you know, they just – they use all these guys. I mean, they brought out Brandon Bolden on Saturday night, and it was like, where did he come from?
Rex Burkhead's going to come back this week. So.
And then Rex Burk, I mean, they just have all these running backs. The Titans had two active running backs for Saturday night's game. I mean, to me, they need to utilize they need to get a change of pace, a couple of change of pace backs, in my opinion.
Yeah, they definitely need to get, I think, that third down guy. And they, you know, they drafted Kalfani Muhammad, and he just, you know, he was not able to make the team. You know, not fit. You got to have a little more physicality than that, but I agree. They need someone like that. It was a great game plan by the Pats. It was just ding, ding, ding. And then later, okay, here's Gronk. And then, you know, Brady made that one play across the field and things like that. For the most part, you're right. It was just like, here you go. Get your three, get your four. And then now we're going to go misdirection. Here's a screen over here, and you're totally outflanked, and it's a big play. And, you know, the Titans, I think, have thrown on some big moments to Murray in the last couple of years. He's had some big-time catches, a game winner against Cincinnati, things like that. But – yeah, who knows? I mean, this next offense could be totally different, and that's going to be interesting. And that's another thing you talk about Robinson's presser yesterday, Darren. You know, when he was asked about attributes, the first thing he said, and this does stick out to me, he said leader of men. He did not say offensive innovator or, you know, quarterback guru. He said leader of men, which, again, I think that's – if you look at what Mularkey did, I think that's the best thing he did. He obviously – these guys played
the
for him.
The players played for him. There's no
there's
question.
There's value
that.
In that. There's a lot of value in that. There's a lot of value in what he did. But it makes me think that you got to keep your mind open on where they might go here. And, again, the guy who I really think someday could be a really good head coach. I don't know if he's ready now. He's only been a coordinator 1 year. But I think Mike Vrabel – with the Texans has the demeanor, and he's a guy who will have the respect because he was a great player. Of course, he played with the Pats too, so in a way he's a Pats guy. But of course, if you were going to go that route, then it's you've got to figure out who's the OC and what direction you're going to go with the offense. It has been – I asked John Robinson about building this team from Lucky's style because I believe they have. I mean, Jack Conklin and Derrick Henry, you know, these are draft picks for a big, physical, tough run-first offense, right?
No question.
So, you know, and he said, you know, he sort of said.
Wasn't Ben Jones brought in for the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, he said, I mean, obviously you need offensive linemen and running backs and whatever for any offense, but, and that was kind of his point. But, you know, I think that it's maybe easier said than done to just say, okay, now we're going to go in a totally different direction with this roster and do this. And as Steve Lehman was pointing out last segment, Marcus Mariota already is struggling to stay healthy, even with them trying to protect him as much as they can. You're going to go 3 and 4 wide all day now and run him more? What's that?
I've said it. I've made it abundantly clear on this show. One of the things that John Robinson has not done a very good job of, because I'm not going to sit here and pray. I mean, he's been praised for 2 years. There are some flaws and there are some warts. Nobody bats 100%. I mean, the backup quarterback situation was embarrassing this year. I mean, give me a break. And moving forward, they have got to have a more capable backup, period, bottom line, especially if Mariota is going to continue to do what he does. Look, it is a weapon. He is very good at it. He also gets hurt doing it, and he's going to continue to get hurt, especially the older he gets. You have to have a capable backup. It was very clear. I mean, unless Mariota could move, there was no way Matt Castle after that Miami game was ever going to play again. I mean, they trotted him out in that Monday Night Football game against Indianapolis. He was a statue. He could not even move. And that was a better option than your backup quarterback. That is unacceptable, period, bottom line. And I know he spent a long time in New England. You didn't really have to worry about that except for 2011 when Bernard Pollard took out Tom Brady in game one and he was out for the season, enter Matt Castle. But give me a break. If this is your quarterback and one of the things that he brings to the table, one of his elements, one of the weapons in his holster is tucking and running or being mobile, which you're not going to take that away because he's very good at it. You got to get a capable backup. They botched the backup quarterback situation. John Robinson botched the backup quarterback situation badly this year. I mean, they missed badly. Look at the two guys they had in training camp vying for the backup position. Are you kidding me?
Well, I agree with you, but I would also point out how many teams have awful backups? A lot.
How many teams have capable backups?
I don't know.
Is Minnesota in the NFC Championship game?
That's true. Minnesota's got the they got the market cornered on throwaway guys that all of a sudden become great. So I don't know. Maybe they're
Pat Shermer's a genius. I mean, yeah. Carson Wentz goes down and Philadelphia's in the NFC Championship game. Is Nick Foles great? No.
He's better than Matt Castle.
He's better than Matt Castle. Yeah. Is Case Keenum great? No. He's way better than Matt Castle. Where would they be without Case Keenum?
Case Keenum may be great, though. Maybe we need to start thinking about it.
Well, there's your point, though. Yeah. You said how many teams – I've just given you two examples that are playing in a championship game with their backup quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, there aren't many good quarterbacks in the world. I agree. They absolutely have to address it. I actually think there's a decent chance that middle round they might take a flyer on someone and draft a QB as, a guy to develop into a backup. And then, of course, who knows after that? I mean, you just don't know – with Mariota's health or down the road, what's going to happen? I would be not surprised at all if they end up drafting a QB because they have to improve that, but they have to improve a lot of things. This roster, I mean, look, Kevin Dodd, if he was what he was supposed to be, imagine what this defense could have been this year. One more monster coming off the edge, another rusher. Well, he wasn't. He's barely an NFL player. I mean, that hurts. They've upgraded, but they still have, definite holes to fill. I think the interior of the offensive line as well.
Yep. It's interesting that you said that's one of the things that stood out. Willie asked me on the air yesterday after the press conference one thing that stood out to you. And I said, well, it was hard to come up with one, but if you're asking me the one thing that stood out, there's a lot of worthy candidates. But I said the question, did things that Mike Mularkey said yesterday factor into the decision? John Robinson's answer was, and I quote, "I would say yes."
That was my brilliant question, by the way.
I know, and you brought that up. I know. We said that was Rexy's question there.
No, I was actually pleasantly surprised that he confirmed that because, he didn't get specific with much. I mean, he actually kind of had two different answers on the coach thing. Early on he said it was a discussion, and then later, Jason Wolf asked him, just to
point
clarify.
Blank.
And then he's like, no, he that
changed,
wasn't discussed.
Yeah, he totally changed his answer.
But, look, I don't think – I mean, the statement from Amy Adams Strunk, it's pretty clear.
Early on in the press conference, John Robinson said coaching changes was a conversation that was discussed. And then, as you mentioned, Jason Wolf then pressed 15 minutes later in the press conference, and his answer was totally different.
Yeah, but look, regardless, I mean, the thing is, first of all, if you're Mike Mularkey, think about last year when they went down to Houston and they got beat on that punt return, and his longtime friend – I got one of his guys, Bobby April, gone the next day. That tells you that at that point, Mike Mularkey was willing to be like, "Well, sorry, you got to go." I mean, this is my last shot at being a head coach. Sorry, you got to go, Bobby. So the fact that it went down like this to me tells me that on both sides, it probably just wasn't going to work out well. I think what Mike said after the Kansas City game told you what you need to know about the relationship. I think it's been a very good relationship with Mike and John Robinson and Amy, and I think as this year progressed and there were more and more doubts from above, it happens in the NFL. But I think it got to the point where Mike's going to stand his ground and say, it's either this, all of me, or none of me. And I think on the other side, to them, it's like, well, I mean, what's going to – so let's keep him, and then next year go 6-10 and fire him.
Yeah, but to me, I said it all year because I realized the fans have really – taken a lot of their frustrations, even though you like to call the Mularkers out a lot, but they took their frustrations.
They
out
win. Of, you win, Mularkers.
On Terry Rubisky, and I've said all year, what is changing OCs going to do? This is what Mike Mularkey wants to do. Either you're on board with exotic smash mouth or you're not. Right now, to me, the organization is on board with exotic smash mouth. What yesterday's press conference told me is John Robinson is no longer on board with exotic smash mouth. He tried to separate himself from exotic smash mouth. It was almost without saying, look, this is not what I want to do. That's what Mike, the head coach, wanted to do, and his coaches to have. I did not want to do this, and to me, yesterday was about separating himself from exotic smash mouth. But changing Terry Rubisky doesn't do anything because Mike Mularkey is the one who wants – that's his system. That's what he wants to do. Terry Rubisky is playing out what the head coach wants.
Yeah. Nah, yeah, we've talked about that before. I mean, it's kind of, it kind of is like, if you believe in this or not. And as Steve Lehman pointed out, and you know, again, Mike's gone, so we're just going to find out what they can do from here. But when Mariota was at his best in his career so far, it was in this offense with Terry Rubisky as his offensive coordinator, the same coach is coaching him. Just look at that however you want. The NFL figured him out, or it was just an aberration, but a good chunk of last year was awfully good in this offense. So, again, I just think it's not as simple. And I, you know, asked John Robinson that. You say, why was the offense not good? And he said, well, I don't know.
By the way, why could nobody answer that question? Mike Mularkey was asked the question. Marcus Mariota was asked the question. John Robinson asked the question. And yet nobody had the answer to the question, why was the offense bad? Why didn't you put a complete game together all year? Nobody can answer it.
Yeah, but I do think it's because it's complex. There are a lot of guilty parties in this thing. I really think that. So, like you said, Darren, ultimately – I think the decision was made that it was more coaching than anything else. I mean, that's what, right?
Yeah.
But I will go down swinging on this all the way. It wasn't all coaching. There were a lot of players that did not perform as well, and things that worked last year that didn't, and guys who didn't perform individually as well too.
I told you the week leading up to the Kansas City Chiefs wild card round when the Steelers were off, I told you on the show that my source had said Arizona was flying to Pittsburgh to talk to Mike Munchak for their head coaching position. Now there's reports out there, as Chase is showing me, from Ian Rappaport, who we had on the show yesterday from NFL Network. The Arizona Cardinals are now putting together a list of second interview requests for their head coaching position, and Steelers offensive line coach Mike Munchak is expected to receive a second interview. And then he wrote, he's a strong candidate. I told you 2 weeks ago that he was a strong candidate for the Arizona job and that Arizona was going to be interviewing him in Pittsburgh. It looks like he will now get a second opportunity.
Wow. We're just talking about Mike Munchak because, of course, this is kind of reminiscent of the Munchak situation
a few years ago. No doubt about it. I mean, it has, and quite honestly, as the season played along, I kept saying on the show – this is starting to feel a lot like Mike Munchak. Now, I didn't think it was going to have almost the exact same ending, but I started saying, you know, I like Mike Mularkey, but it's starting to have that Mike Munchak feel. And I remember the Mike Munchak feel is everybody liked him. The players loved playing for him. He was a stand-up, noble guy. Both of them are exactly the same way, Munchak and Mularkey. Old school guys, been around football for a long time. But it felt the same way, and like I said, it ended up, what's crazy is it played out the same way, really, when you get down to it.
Yeah, reports that Mularkey may be Cleveland Browns OC candidate. How about that?
Yeah,
I saw Mary Kay Cabot has put out that former Giants coach Ben McAdoo is also interviewing for that position. That,
McAdoo versus Mularkey.
Yeah.
Ooh.
McAdoo, that was a great showing in New York.
Yeah,
that makes sense that the Browns would be interested in that.
Hey, McAdoo a year ago was a genius. 1 year, look at this genius they brought in. Boom, now he's gone.
Yeah, but then the players
decided they didn't like him.
Yeah, which does happen, you know. Just because you're a head coach, you do kind of have to have the players play for you.
Like, I know everybody wants Josh McDaniels, who apparently is going to the Colts, but I don't know. Go read some stuff from players who played for him in Denver. That kind of matters.
It's not flattering.
But, you know, hey, he was able to call successful plays with Tom Brady quarterbacking his offense. Congratulations.
We'll come back and wrap up hour number one of 3D. We'll do that next.
Back here on 3D, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Chase McCabe, Joe Rexroad, Preds, and Vegas Golden Knights tonight. Pre-game coverage with DMAC at 6 o'clock. The puck drop at 7 right here on these airwaves. And again, just a PSA, if you don't have to be out today, don't. Just sit around, listen to the radio, listen to our show, and just stay inside because it is nasty out there. Talking Titans and the coaching search as we are now in the first full day of the coaching search. If you want to weigh in, 615-737-1025. We always welcome your phone calls. So something that you and I were kind of talking about during the break, Joe, about this, and you know, it's been reported that staff changes needed to be made. You know, you have in your column, and we heard it yesterday in the press conference, that John Robinson admitted that Mike Mularkey's press conference on Sunday did factor into the decision as well. You can connect the dots together. Yeah, I've been vocal in saying that I thought this offense needed something different, that Terry Robiskie was not getting the job done as the offensive coordinator. But you made a very good point during the break saying that, look, I mean, yeah, he could have fired Terry Robiskie. He was still going to bring in one of his guys. And that's where I think the power struggle really starts. John Robinson comes from New England. He's worked for a guy in Bill Belichick that it's his way or the highway. You do what Bill says. You can learn a lot from Bill, but don't make Bill angry and follow direction. That is how John Robinson has been built. And I think there's a little bit of that he has brought to this organization, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But Mike Mularkey's not that guy. He's not like a Bill Belichick. He's not going to, you know, command a room. He's a very nice guy. He's a player's coach. He gets along with everybody. And I think that there was a little bit of a clash there because John Robinson had a certain way that he wanted things done, and Mularkey was not doing it that way.
Yeah, like, so whether it's, okay, like if Mularkey would have been willing to, you know, let's say get rid of Robiskie. See, I don't believe that that is the only condition in this situation. I believe it's then, you know, would Mularkey have brought in, like, the QB coach from the Eagles, who's a hot candidate, Felipe, who's a hot candidate out there? And I strongly do not believe so. Mike Mularkey is an offensive coach. His entire career is as an offensive coordinator when he hasn't been a head coach or an offensive position coach. This is his offense. He's going to run his offense. So if it's Terry Robiskie or if it's someone else, it's going to be he's not going to relinquish that and just be the head coach and say, okay, you do your offense over here. Let's do something totally different. So that to me is what it comes down to. I mean, if John Robinson, and I do believe John Robinson liked the philosophy, built the team around the philosophy, worked well with Mike Mularkey while they were here. But at some point this season, he decided, yeah, this just isn't working. I mean, to me, that game at Arizona was pretty damning for Terry Robiskie and this whole crew. I mean, you know, that was like, wow, you're in this situation in a game like this, and this is what you come out with. And, you know, of course, then from there, you know, remember, they adjusted some. They went more to tempo. They actually did a lot of good things offensively against San Fran the next week and against the Rams. But that game, I think, was, when you look back, was a critical moment for this. So at some point, John Robinson decided this whole thing is not what we want to do. So I understand the sentiment there. You know, it's just, no, there's no guarantee it's going to get better, but that's his charge.
That's the biggest concern for me, and I've heard a lot of people say this, that, yeah, there were things that weren't necessarily working, but at the end of the day, he won 19 games, including a playoff game, in 2.5 years as the head coach of this team. Can you do better than that? Is there a guy out there that's going to come in here and be better than what that was?
And anybody who says, well, tied for the easiest schedule in the NFL. The AFC South lost two of their best quarterbacks. They didn't have to play those guys. You know, they blew the division, all that stuff. I agree. I mean, that stuff's all fair. It's all fair criticism. And the offense looked terrible this year. Agree. If it was 2 years of winning 19 games and the offense was this the whole time, then I don't see how you make any argument for Mularkey.
Right.
But that's not what it was. You know, last year, for whatever reason, and in glimpses this year, the glimpses being – at Jacksonville, Seattle at home, second half at Kansas City, and winning the first playoff game in 14 years. Those little glimpses were, oh, this is the offense that they want to be. This is it. It's everything working. And part of it is Mariota running. I think whoever the coach is moving forward, Chase, it's a dilemma. But I don't think there's any way that Marcus Mariota is a great elite franchise quarterback staying in the pocket his whole career. It's not – but then
you gotta
how
play
do you protect
strengths.
Him? How do you protect him? I mean, his health and his ability to stay healthy and his durability, that's, to me, the number one question about him moving forward. But that's whoever comes in here, whatever they do with the offense, you have to figure that part of it out, and it's not easy.
Yeah, and I a quick comment on Marcus Mariota. One thing that has always – I think we've always liked about him is just how good of a person he is. You know, he's – he's one of those guys that he apologizes for saying pissed off, you know, because his mom got mad at him.
His mom made him do it.
You know, but we like that. I mean, it's like, okay, this is a really good guy. He's never going to throw his coaches under the bus in with the media in public. But I want to know how vocal he is behind the scenes. I don't think a player should define a coaching search, but at the same time, if this is the guy that's going to be your quarterback moving forward, you need to get his opinion. You know, Tom Brady is going to have a say in who's running the offense if Josh McDaniel leaves. I mean, because Bill Belichick is going to sit down with him if that relationship is going to remain, which I think we all think it will. He's going to have a little bit of an input on it. I want to know if Marcus Mariota, as nice as he is willing to say, hey, these are the things that Mike and Terry did, and it didn't work for me. This is kind of what I need moving forward. And I think that's important.
That's a great point. Actually, I'm going to steal that for a comma idea.
Do it.
That's a great point. And I don't know the answer to that because he is legitimately – all the things that he is at that podium, that's him. I mean, he really is that unassuming and I think unwilling to criticize. I mean, look, we all saw Derrick Henry went the wrong way on that play that almost lost the game to Jaguars. And he seriously tried to say his footwork was terrible. Like, dude, you're lying.
He's
– you know, come on. But no, but that's him. So,
right.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Will he step up and say, look, this didn't work. This, I mean, I think he would – I think in a private setting, you would think that he would be comfortable. But I
don't know, though. I don't know the answer
something.
To that.
But, yeah, he needs to take more command of this. You know, he really does. I think – everything about him, you know, this team loves him, and they should in this community too. But there are times when he needs to be a little bit more assertive, you know, and you know, talk a little more trash like he did against Barry Church after that stiff arm.
I agree, and I think that's something that he needs to work on and needs to be discussed behind the scenes. He's Joe Rexroad. I'm Chase McCabe. We're live at the Jack Daniel's Barrelhouse at Bridgestone Arena. Stick around. Hour number two of 3D coming up next.